From the Land de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 28th day of March, 2022. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's from Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. We'll preview this Thursday's USDA reports with him. They'll include the prospective plantings and the grain stocks numbers. And then, as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at those reports along with avian influenza and the impact of the Ukraine war on prices with Chad Hart, agricultural economist from Iowa State University. And along the way, I'll update you on what the president's budget released earlier today held for agriculture, all on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn today at $7.48.5, finished 5.5 cents lower. July at $7.30.5, down 4.25. And December futures 4.5 lower at $6.64.5. The May soybeans, $16.64.25, 46 cents lower on the day. July down 41.75. New crop November, 28 lower. It settled at $14.68.75. Bean meal, 9 cents lower at $4.78.90. The bean oil at $72.45, down $2.30. And wheat futures were off 45.25 in the lead May at $10.57. The harvest month down 41 cents for the July soft red at $10.51.5. And the hard red July down 40.25 cents, rather 37.5 cents at $10.69.5. For the day. Live cattle futures at $136.77.5, down 60 cents. Feeder cattle down 25 at $165.07.5. And lean hogs per 100 pounds up 20 cents at $126.05. Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, now joins us to discuss this marketplace. Hi, Kurt. Thanks for being with us today.
Well, good afternoon, Todd. Glad to be here. Thank you.
Tell me what happened in the marketplace and why it's lower.
Well, over the weekend, I think all the news channels had a hard time deciphering words. I meant to say this, but it meant this. And so this Biden speech was, pretty well priced in an overnight trade. And also along with that news, we saw the news that or confirmation, a little bit more data on maybe Russia's taking a step back and kind of retreating just a little bit and digging in. And ideas are now that maybe the western part of Ukraine will be able to move grain out or have a chance to do some farming. But this news changes hourly. Tonight, tomorrow will be a whole different story. But for the most part, there is a ray of hope. There are reports, though, that grain has been railed out of Ukraine. One analyst or one newswire did report that, if we can see shipments being railed out, they could move up as much as 600,000 tons of corn a month out of Ukraine. So we'll see if that happens or not. But those producers hopefully will be able to farm, get the fuel to do that and keep the grain moving out of that. Also, along with that, just a little bit more news on COVID in China, talking about some more lockdowns for one of the major cities for up to 9 days. So there's a little concern that maybe the demand in China is starting to slow, and that even though they've been buying 132,000 tons of old beans here every day, that once these are bought and shipped, that the future need might slow somewhat, along with the Chinese news that we've got their pork producers operating in the red. There seems to be plenty of pork around, but yet, on one hand, they're releasing pork out of the reserve. So can you believe the news? Who knows? But there continues to be a lot of noise out there to keep the market kind of jittery. What we do know, though, is we have in the month, in the quarter, and the funds have been long, so this is probably a little positioning ahead of that. Then, of course, we'll have Super Thursday with three major reports Thursday.
So we have the grain stocks along with the prospective plantings report. And what else is due out?
Hog and pig report, my friend. Hog and pigs. We got the trade looking at a few less numbers. Hogs, They're looking for about 98%, kept for breeding 100%, and kept for marketing about 98%. So a few less hogs than what we've been accustomed to. The trend's been a little lower on those numbers. And this pork market has just been totally on fire. These summer hogs are in a position here to maybe go up and test the all-time highs. So as long as these pork prices stay firm, it's giving the producer an opportunity to offset some of these higher feed costs. Once again, if you're in a butterfly pork chops, I'd be continuing to look for those on sale and continue to put those in the freezer there. Cattle and feed report, 9% more higher than expected on the cattle numbers. Part of that was due to the placements. We're seeing dry conditions out west. But when you go to the grocery store, you need to ask the guy behind the counter, how's come he's raising prices when we got a lot more cattle around?
I'm sure they'll be happy that, that their customers are doing that. You might tell them that Kurt Kimmel told you to do that and give him an address for him on there in Normal, Illinois.
Kimmel, K-I-M-M-E-L.
That's right. Yeah. On Thursday, USDA will release the prospective plantings report, as you mentioned, along with the grain stocks figures. Can you run through those and what estimates look like, please?
Yeah, on the corn, depends which survey you look at, but corn acreage is expected to be about 92 million acres. That's the same as about the outlook form put out. But a year ago, we're at 93.3, so about 1.3 million acres less. On the soybeans, 88.7. The outlook form was 88. A year ago was 87.1, so about 1.5, 1.6 million acres more. I would think the corn number would probably be a little higher. When you go back in history, whenever you have grain markets at these higher levels, we see a pickup of some additional acres that kind of magically appear, just like when prices are low, acres kind of magically disappear. But whatever the number is, as soon as that's out, they're going to wait and say, we'll see what the June report says, because that's going to be some actual activity taking place. What's going to affect acres probably more than anything now is the weather, and we're going to need some warmer weather after what we saw here over the weekend and first part of this week. Grain stocks, the significance of the grain stocks report is basically it measures our first quarter usage here of 2022. It gives us an idea of where we are on the supply that's left over. As long as the crush remains high and China keeps buying beans, they'll use that as a benchmark. Those two demand things as a benchmark to what we have left over to kind of give us an estimate of what the ending stocks might be on the next monthly supply demand report. But anyway, corn, quarterly stocks 7.877. and the bean stocks, 1.9. And this is as of March here. This is not the ending stocks, but the quarterly grain stocks report.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate you taking so much time with me today.
You bet. Take care.
You too. Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report for this Monday afternoon. You can always hear him again if you'd like on our website at willag.org, willag.org. There you'll find our daily agricultural programming, the Closing Market Report, our weekly programming, Commodity Week, and the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast as well. They're all in the podcast section. The first two are on the homepage, and on that homepage you'll also find information from the agricultural economy, the crop scientist, and the animal scientist from right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. It's all at willag.org, willag.org. Well, earlier today, President Joe Biden released his fiscal year 2023 budget. U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack had some information about that budget and released it earlier today. The Biden-Harris administration submitted to Congress. The president's budget, of course, is usually mostly dead on arrival in Congress. I would like to go through some of the things that the budget holds for agriculture. Some of it, of course, invests in climate resiliency as part of the president's whole of government approach. The budget proposes $1.177 billion in funding to address climate change across private working agricultural lands. The budget proposes $1 billion to support agricultural producers and landowners to undertake conservation and climate smart practices on agricultural lands. It prioritizes consistent access, safe, nutritious food for all Americans as well. USDA's core nutrition programs are the most far-reaching and powerful tools available to ensure that all Americans, regardless of race, ethnicity, or background, the administration says, will have access to healthy, affordable food. The budget proposes $111 billion for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, that's otherwise known as SNAP. It's a budget level that would support about 43.5 million Americans per month. It maintains funding for the Special Supplemental Nutrition Program for Women, Infants, and Children, otherwise known as WIC, at $6 billion in 2023. An average of 6.4 million low-income women, infants, and children are expected to participate in that program each month. The president's budget also points towards rural economies, with an investment of $935 million in rural America. It also hopes to develop more and better markets for U.S. agricultural products. USDA is working to transform the nation's food system by making it fair, competitive, distributed, and resilient, and by building new markets at home and abroad, Secretary Vilsack says in the press release. The budget builds upon the Biden-Harris administration's efforts to create a fairer, more competitive, and more resilient meat and poultry supply chain by providing more than $10 million for oversight and enforcement of the Packers and Stockyards Act. And finally, to ensure underserved groups can more fully access and participate in USDA programs and services, the budget supports ongoing efforts to help agricultural producers and landowners resolve heirs and land ownership and succession issues by proposing a program level of more than $60 million. In this budget, the National Institute of Food and Agriculture proposes more than $315 million for minority-serving institutions, an increase of more than $53 million above the 2021 enacted level. The budget also proposes $39 million for the Rural Partners Network, a renewed and expanded initiative to leverage USDA's extensive network of county-based offices to help people in high-poverty counties, including energy communities. You can see more about the president's budget on the White House website at whitehouse.gov/OMB/budget. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Monday. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Find us online at willag.org, willag.org. We're now joined by Chad Hart. He's an agricultural economist based at Iowa State University in Ames. Thank you, Chad, for being with us. A series of topics that I'd like to talk about today. We probably should begin as it relates to the price of corn and wheat with the war in Ukraine. It has, I won't say disrupted supplies yet, though that is somewhat the case. It's mostly about whether supplies will become available later, I think. How's the market been handling this, in your opinion?
Well, yeah, you're right in that, you know, the impact on actual supplies day to day right now has been really small, but it's the planning for the future. What are we going to see in terms of plantings, not only here in the U.S., but as we look in the Black Sea region? What are we going to see, especially as we look at that winter wheat crop that was planted in Ukraine last fall that is in the fields right now? And so you've seen the markets, you know, put in some significantly higher prices over the past few weeks with the outbreak of the war there. And so we've been putting a fairly healthy, if you will, risk premium into the marketplace to reflect the war as we look there. And now I think the markets are trying to sort of reassess themselves as we look towards, here in a couple of days, the prospective plantings report. That's when we'll get the first big indication of adjustments being made by U.S. farmers to bolster supplies as we look forward for the 2022 marketing year.
Do you suspect producers will have made adjustments?
I think we'll see some adjustment, but I think the big two things I'm going to watch for here are two. One, will be just the total number of acres in play. When we've been looking over the past few years, we have seen that planting number across the big 20 crops that USDA counts there. We've been watching that acreage slowly work its way up. The other thing I'm going to watch here is any sort of indication about double cropping, especially as I look at from Kansas over into southern Illinois and Indiana, that belt that can do soybeans followed by winter wheat. Because when you think about it, the biggest impact from the war is going to be in the winter wheat arena here. It's a little, you know, too late for the U.S. to respond in this current growing season, but will we set ourselves up to respond as we look forward to the next growing season within winter wheat?
So you're talking about how much winter wheat would be in play for 2023, not for 2022.
Correct. It would be for 23. And the reason I say after beans is I'm sitting here thinking, okay, they can do corn. I mean, yeah, and you can do the same thing after corn. But I'm wondering, if you especially want to guarantee a really good winter wheat crop, the idea is after beans, you have a, let's call it a longer window for planting for that crop, especially if I go with a short season bean. And so that is one of the things I'm watching for here, is do we see that sort of play being made here?
How would that impact markets over time? I would think that would be a 2023 issue, not a 2022 issue as it relates to price.
But if you think about it, it's the quickest, you know, it's the quickest time frame for the U.S. to respond as far as winter wheat is concerned. The 2022 crop is already here. It's in the ground. We can't change that. We can only set ourselves up for 2023.
And winter wheat sowings in the southern hemisphere will be important as a factor in this as well.
They will. They definitely will. If you know, South America will get the first chance to respond to the war in Ukraine as far as winter wheat is concerned. We were set up to respond in terms of spring wheat. And when I look at spring wheat prices, they basically are sort of treading along with corn and soybeans. So I'm not seeing a lot of great emphasis for winter wheat to spring wheat to surge ahead here, because, you know, the prices with corn and soybeans have remained competitive with spring wheat. It's winter wheat where we're seeing the additional pricing pressure.
Now, prior to the war in Ukraine, there was a push higher, of course, in corn, soybeans, and wheat. I'm wondering if you think that will have an impact on the total number of acres sown to those three crops, at corn and soybeans, the new ones that'll be really released here at the end of this week on Thursday, and whether total number of acres might be up.
Yep, I do believe total number of acres will be up. In fact, that's a big thing I am watching for here. We've been seeing that slowly increase over the past couple of years. I think the higher price levels across the board should bring in even more area as we're looking forward here to the 2022 planting season.
So you're thinking 3 million more acres total between corn and soybeans, or 4, or something different?
In my case, I'm sitting here thinking probably between corn and soybeans, I'm looking for an additional probably 2 to 2.5. I think wheat could pick up another, wheat and cotton could pick up probably another 1 million acres there. So I'm probably looking 3 to 4 total when you look across the broader landscape of row crop.
So you are at, what, 92 or 93 on corn and 89 on soybeans?
Well, no, I'd be 93 on the corn. I'm probably in that 89 to 90 camp on soybeans.
Turn your attention to some other things that have been happening on the fundamental side. Avian influenza is along the flyways in the United States. It started in the eastern part of the U.S. As migratory birds move, and has made its way into the Midwest. Will this have an impact on the number of birds in flocks, do you think? A big enough impact that it could impact the commodity markets in some form?
I think eventually it will. I mean, as we've seen here in Iowa, I think we're now up to 7 cases have been reported. It has taken out somewhere on the order of about 10% of our, you know, what have been our layer flock here. So probably the biggest impact I'm watching right now might be in the egg market as we're looking forward. But I'd say the bigger issue to me right now is the timing of these events. When you think back to 2015 and the avian influenza outbreak then, that came about a month to a month and a half later in the season than what we're seeing right now. And so we were sort of halfway through the migration season in the 2015 outbreak. This outbreak started right at the very beginning of migration season. So it means we're going to face this influenza pressure for a much longer period of time, and it can have a greater impact because of that.
The livestock sector consumes about a third of the corn produced in the United States. Poultry is the largest consumption portion of that area. How much of an impact do you think it could have?
It could have a sizable impact depending upon how this outbreak moves as we go throughout the country here. When you think about that corn consumption, though, a lot of that would be for the broiler industry, more down in the southeast than what we're seeing. Most of the impact, for example, here in Iowa is showing up in the layer industry, impacting eggs more than broilers.
And finally, turn your attention to the carbon markets. We've been having discussions across the whole of the United States about this as it relates to agricultural lands and usage. What are you hearing in Iowa?
Well, what we're seeing is, I would call it, a lot of excitement around the potential for carbon markets, but also a lot of uncertainty. You know, we have several different companies traversing around the state offering these carbon opportunities at the same time, too. I think a lot of producers are trying to figure out, what do these opportunities really mean? They're looking at contracts that could run anywhere from a year-long contract to 10-year-long contracts. And so it's, let's call it, a brand new market that farmers are exploring right now, but I'm not seeing a lot of movement. It's more like window shopping. People want to know about them, but we're not seeing a lot of movement at participating within them at this stage.
Do you have any advice?
The biggest advice I give folks is to do your homework in this case. You know, just as we sort of had over the past 10, 15 years with wind farm development or some of the solar farm development. These are new opportunities for agriculture to participate in a different market, but it means spending some time thinking about how does that integrate into the farm plan. And so sitting down and talking with not only the farm family, but some trusted advisors, and especially an attorney in this case, because in participating in the carbon markets, you're signing a contract. You need to know the specifics. What's that contract requiring you to do, and what sort of, let's call it, benefits and restrictions does it put upon the farm to participate in a carbon market opportunity?
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
That's Chad Hart. He's an agricultural economist at Iowa State University in Ames. You've been, of course, listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.